Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
From KMOX Sports.
Come on, let's get going now.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Wynn swings and he drives that to left field. Back to the track and gone!
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
Now, Matt Pauley and the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
On a Friday night, we've arrived. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley. Great to have you with us, taking you till 8 o'clock this evening. We've got a jam-packed program tonight as we'll talk some Cardinals baseball, we'll talk some college football, we'll talk Billiken's basketball. We got a lot to get to between now and 8 o'clock. As always, if you do want to join the program, you can do so by calling, texting, tweeting 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. That's how you call or text. You can tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air, M-A-T-T-P-A-U-L-E-Y on air, or you can leave a voice message for us via the Odyssey app. If you're listening on the app, you see where that microphone button is, you press it down, and your messages can come into the studio. So that's all the different ways that you can get connected with us. I haven't done this a lot. We haven't had a lot of shows really here recently between around the holidays, and I've been sick and all kinds of things. So I have not been with you here pure recently, but I haven't just had one of the – every once in a while – so this happens a lot during baseball season. I try to give some segments kind of back to you, the listener. Where I give you a chance to chime in on some things. We haven't done that as much lately. And coming off all the noise around the Cardinals and Nolan Arenado, and also some of the things that John Mozeliak said to us yesterday on the Countdown to Opening Day show, I don't know if anybody's interested in talking through things, but if you are, coming up later on, we're going to give you an opportunity to chime in on how you're feeling about the way things are going. By the way, I don't know if I can officially announce this yet. I'm a wait. How about that for a tease? I'll officially announce what I want to announce on Monday if I'm allowed to. I'll say this. Next week on the Countdown to Opening Day show, we're going to have a featured guest that I think you're going to want to hear from that you really probably haven't been able to hear from. So I'll leave it at that. And once I get confirmation on everything, we'll pass that along coming up on Monday or later on what that's going to look like. But obviously it is Cardinals related because it is the Countdown to Opening Day show. So this is what we are going to do here in this hour number one of the program today. In just a little while, we're going to talk with Connor Guerra. He covers college football for Saturday Down South. We will talk with him about the college football playoff, and we're going to get in with him just before kickoff of the Texas-Oklahoma State game, which is going to be going on this evening. And then later on this hour, something I want to do. Yesterday, we had John Mozeliak on the Countdown show. I thought he had some interesting things to say and some things that he had not said previously. And, you know, when we're airing the interview like we're doing yesterday, it's a conversation. It was me and Mike Claiborne talking with John Mozeliak. There's not really the opportunity to stop and assess some of the things that are being said. And that's also not really the format of the Countdown to Opening Day show. So if you were listening yesterday, you heard some of what Mo had to say. I'm going to play back for you some of the cuts from the conversation yesterday, and then I'm going to attempt to add, I wouldn't say context, it's not context that's needed, but I'll attempt to kind of address what was said, because I thought there were some interesting things that were said from Mosaloc yesterday. So that's going to be coming up later on this hour, and that's going to probably be after that we give you the opportunity to react. In our second hour, Bob Ramsey is going to join us. What a great win for the Billikens against St. Bonaventure the other night. It was fun watching that game, and they were in control of it. And then the Bonnies, they made a little bit of a run there right there at the end, but they were able to hold on and they were able to get the win, and they're able to sit on it as they're the 3-0 team right now in A-10 play. They're not playing this weekend. They're not going to play again until Tuesday, and they're going to have a really tough match. They've got a tough road trip coming up, one of the toughest road trips in the A-10. They'll go to VCU and then to Richmond over the course of the next week or so. So they'll play Tuesday at VCU, and then a week from tomorrow, they'll play at Richmond. But they look like a different team, but I would say they look like the best version of themselves since league play got started. We would see those flashes during non-conference play. Well, it's more than a flash right now, as they've been able to put some things together. So we'll talk with Bob Ramsey, and then we'll wrap up the program with our weekly Friday conversation with our guy, Kevin Wheeler. He's going to join us for our weekly baseball chat that's going to come up towards the end of the program. So that's what's on tap for today. As always, if you want to join the program, again, you call, text, you tweet, or your voice message. You call or text at 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. If you want to tweet at me, it's at Matt Pauley on air, MattPauley on air, or you can leave those voice messages right there on the Odyssey app if that's how you are listening. We'll take a break, and when we come back, Connor O'Gara is going to join us. We'll talk college football with him in front of tonight's college football semifinal game, and then in the college football playoff. That's coming up in just a moment. We'll roll on after this on a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Just a couple more college football games left in the season tonight. Ohio State and Texas in the national championship game. Yesterday was Notre Dame getting a win against Penn State, and to talk all things college football, very happy to welcome in a national columnist for Saturday Down South, also hosting the Saturday Down South podcast. He is Connor O'Gara. You follow him on Twitter at CJ O'Gara. Connor, thanks for taking some time with us today. How are you?
Yeah, good to be here. You know, always love to be able to talk in the midst of the playoff. A lot of crazy developments I feel like we've had over the course of the last few weeks in this sport. And just when you think, oh, yeah, we got everything kind of figured out. Portal looks settled, and coaching carousel looks settled. I mean, who knows? I mean, this sport just always kind of throws you for a loop.
Yeah, and from a Saturday Down South perspective, and I know the company has websites focusing on the Big Ten and other leagues as well, but Saturday Down South, very much an SEC-centric website. It's odd watching these games without any of the classic, I know Texas obviously in the league, but without any of the classic SEC representation.
Yeah, I mean, Texas is doing the SEC's bidding at this point, which is just crazy. I mean, think about that. Like, if you had told an SEC fan back in 2021, when Texas and Oklahoma were announced to be coming to the SEC, if you had said, hey, by the time that they come, the lone representative in the final four of the college football playoff from the SEC is going to be Texas, SEC fans would have looked at you and just laughed you out of the room. And at that point, it's worth remembering, that was before even Steve Sarkisian and coached a game at Texas. I mean, that's how long ago that was, and how much things have changed. A program that started off at 5-7, and everybody's still making the Texas is never going to be back folks jokes, and to sit here and be like, wow, I mean, Texas, you know, gets to the SEC championship, a place that Texas A&M is still trying to get to after 13 years in the SEC, and 13 years now for Texas A&M and Mizzou in this conference. And, you know, Mizzou has obviously been able to get to Atlanta, but, you know, we've seen in the past, it's difficult to sustain success in this conference. And I think Texas has check so many of those boxes of what it's going to be able to take. And for Oklahoma, it's just been a totally different story in that journey. So, yeah, it is strange to be talking about Texas and Ohio State as a Big Ten SEC matchup.
Yeah, and that's what I mean, just in the sense that the classic SEC teams, the Alabamas, the Georgias, they're not there. And credit, though, goes to Texas for what they've been able to do. We'll see what happens tonight. What do you think about tonight's game? Not many people are giving Texas much of a chance against Ohio State.
I'm giving Texas a small chance. I still picked Ohio State to win this game. If we're talking about it from an odd standpoint, I do think Texas has a chance to be able to cover. Now, there are so many different factors that could prevent Texas from being able to play to the level that we've seen Ohio State play at during these first two playoff games, and most notably Jeremiah Smith. The guy has just looks like a revelation for Ohio State this season, and especially in the college football playoff, wherein he's been unguardable. And everything you kind of throw at that guy, Will Howard is just kind of stepping back and going, nope, I'm going to take my chances that he's going to win that matchup. But it's also the fact that Ohio State's got the number one defense in college football, and Ryan Day deserves a lot of credit for that Jim Knowles hire a few years ago. And seeing what that's going to look like against the Texas offense is going to be everything. Can you get pressure on Quinn Ewers? Can you trust that Steve Sarkisian is going to be able to put his quarterback in favorable spots, so that he's not a sitting duck back there? Because this is someone who's worked off multiple injuries this year, an oblique injury, an ankle injury, and is someone that has really had to kind of figure things out when, you know, there have been moments where it looks like he hasn't really had his best stuff. And obviously what he did 4th-and-13 against Arizona State, the biggest throw, the biggest touchdown that Texas has had since the Vince Young getting the edge against USC in the national championship 2 decades earlier, what he did in that moment really told you a lot about him. So can he overcome some of these weaknesses we've seen? That's going to determine this matchup, in my opinion. And I'll give Texas a puncher's chance just because the talent is there and people are discounting that. They haven't been paying attention. But no, I think Ohio State and that $20 million roster has got a bit too much.
Yeah, it's interesting something you just said. You talked about trust, and that's been one of the key things in this, especially with these teams that have been playing. You know, we talked a lot about both Penn State and Notre Dame. Can you trust them to win a big game? Can you trust Quinn Ewers to do that? Can you trust anything about Texas? Can you trust Ohio State with what we saw with them at the end of the regular season and with their quarterback Will Howard? In many ways, it's not about which team is excelling. It's about which team do you trust not to make mistakes.
It is, and you know, it's difficult this time of year to kind of figure out who these teams are going to be. We kind of forget that it is an extended layoff in between these playoff games. And that's the one thing that I would say. If you're of the impression that Ohio State is going to show up like a world beater in the way that it's been these first two games, I'd say, you know, go back and look at kind of the context of those matchups. The Tennessee game, we now have the context of realizing, oh, that team was pretty ticked off after the way that things played out against Michigan, and it showed up with some bad intentions against Tennessee. And Oregon, you know, you have the storyline of knowing that's a rematch. That's the game that Ohio State was so devastated to lose up in Eugene, the Will Howard, you know, running out the clock thing, and the way that all played out. And Ohio State has looked like a team that has had something to prove. Are they the team that still comes out with that sort of edge as the 6-point favorite? I haven't looked at the line in the last few hours, but are they still coming out with that type of edge against this Texas team? Do you trust them to show up with that gear? Because if they show up like that, yeah, nobody's beating them. Nobody. Penn State wouldn't have beaten them. Notre Dame, I don't think, is capable of playing at that level. Texas, I don't think, is quite able to play at that level. And that's kind of the question is, are we going to look back on this year of college football and go, well, yeah, it was just kind of Ohio State peaking at the right time, having that Michigan loss be the best thing that ever happened to them, and having them go on this rampage that felt like 2019 LSU. Are we going to look back on this season and have that be the clear takeaway? It's possible, and it certainly feels like the most likely outcome at this point.
Connor Aguirre from Saturday Down South continuing to join us. From a local perspective here in St. Louis, I found it to be interesting because a lot of Penn State fans were not happy with Drew Aller because of that interception that he threw. A lot of people talk about why they let Bo Pribula walk out the door. Well, that's a guy who's going to be playing at Missouri next year, and he looked pretty well good last night from a Penn State perspective, just based off what I was reading.
I'll tell you, you know, I haven't been the biggest Drew Aller guy, and I'm not trying to say this to be like some sort of a victory lap. I thought some of the NFL things with him were a little bit premature. And, you know, you see the lack of weapons outside of Tyler Warren that Penn State had, and the fact that they had zero catches from wide receivers in that game last night, which is just baffling to consider that. But I had moments in that game where I thought Bo Perbula would look really good right now in this Penn State offense with finishing off some drives. And there are going to be some things that I think Penn State fans will look back on this team and go, man, it would have been nice to have our backup quarterback who played a significant role for us on this team. And I think that, you know, we'll see what it looks like with Kirby Moore and this Mizzou offense and some of the different things that they're going to be able to do with him, getting the quarterback run game going in ways that it just wasn't there with a banged up version of Brady Cook this year. And I think that's really going to benefit Mizzou. Can Bo Pabrula become more of a one read and go type guy where he's actually able to work through his progressions as a passer, because he really wasn't asked to do that with the packages he was running at Penn State? I think Mizzou fans are going to find him to be a really, really fun addition, and they can kind of build around him. But yeah, I do think that there's always going to be a piece of this Penn State puzzle going, man, I wonder if that was really the last piece right there, and if things had been different, if they had, could have had him available, if that could have been the difference to finish off some of those drives.
Where do you put Mizzou right now? Because when you look at their win totals over the last few years, they're right there with the upper echelon of the SEC, but much like Texas, even though Mizzou's been in the league much longer, a lot of people still don't look at them as a classic SEC kind of team. Is there still a league-wide bias against the University of Missouri?
I think that's always going to be there. I do. And I think it's going to be there for the teams in the SEC that don't recruit top 10 classes on a yearly basis, whether that's Arkansas, whether that's Kentucky, whether that's Vanderbilt. If you're outside of the top 10 nationally, you aren't considered a big time player in the SEC, and you'll always have a bit of that underdog sort of mentality. And people will dismiss the fact that Mizzou is 21-5 over the course of the last two seasons. I mean, you look at it and you're like, dang, they really didn't have bad losses. They lost to at least solid teams. They didn't have these unbelievably embarrassing losses where even a team like Ole Miss, you know, this year losing the way that it did to a 4-win Kentucky team, you're like, man, you were supposed to be at the peak of your powers. You still had that type of a letdown, and bam, everybody's going to talk about the Vandy loss and the Oklahoma loss. And you look back at this 2-year run that Mizzou had, and you're like, well, you really didn't have those games in which you just, hey, you know what, you just forget about you. And that's a credit to Eli Drinkwitz. And he's reached a level with this program that I didn't think they were quite capable of getting to. But moving forward, yeah, it's probably a bit more middle of the pack, and people are going to want to use that confirmation bias based on the recruiting rankings to say, hey, I don't think you're really legit. I don't think you're built to hang in the SEC. That will be kind of the understanding moving forward. But who knows? Maybe they can overcome that. I think as long as you can keep this core together, that coaching staff, I think you're going to be setting yourself up really well. But yeah, it is a really nice 2-year run that a lot of programs across college football would love to be able to have.
100%. Last thing for you, the biggest news in the SEC in the last week, Carson Beck making the decision to move on from Georgia. Looks like he's going to head to Miami. How surprised were you by that decision?
In some ways, very surprised, because I think you need to understand like the timeline of this, because if you had told me that a month ago that he was going to hit the portal, I would have said, wait a minute, what? Like that's a pretty surprising result of the three options that he in theory had, including go to the NFL, which was his original choice, or come back to Georgia. But over the course of the last few weeks leading up to the Sugar Bowl, you heard a different sort of attitude talking about Gunnar Stockton, his replacement in that game, compared to Carson Beck. And everybody's talking about, oh, Gunnar Stockton, he drives this 1984 F-150 that's got over 300,000 miles on it. Meanwhile, Carson Beck is the dude with the Lamborghini NIL deal and the private jet NIL deal. And you could tell that things had just kind of run their course. And so with that context, when this news came out, you're like, all right, well, that's not a surprise. And oh, he's going to go where his girlfriend is at Miami, and he's going to finish his college career there. And then what, 24 hours it was, we find out that he is indeed going to Miami. And it's surprising when you consider he was preseason number one pick in the NFL draft and the way too early mocks and all those different things. But also maybe not that surprising when you consider that guys that have disappointing years that can kind of use the system to have that extra year of eligibility you know, you can take a disappointing senior season, I put in air quotes, and go, ah, you know what, let me actually just rewrite my story and just play somewhere else, get millions of dollars to be able to do that, and then, you know, kind of go from there. We'll see if Quinn Ewers ends up doing that. That's the next one to kind of keep your eye on that everybody's been talking about, Notre Dame or Oregon, where he could end up, maybe not going to the NFL after kind of a disappointing season in terms of his NFL draft prospects. So, yeah, it is just a wild development. And it's a sign, man, just as we were talking about before, college football, it always has a way of kind of surprising you, and you got to just always be on your toes with this stuff.
Saturday Down South is an incredible website, and you guys just kind of did a redo of it. It looks fantastic. It always, and the content is always great. Encourage people to check that out for themselves. Check you out as well, Connor, on Twitter at CJ O'Gara. Connor O'Gara, join us. Connor, thank you so much for the time. Enjoy the game tonight, and hopefully we can catch up again in the future.
Absolutely. Really appreciate it.
That's Connor O'Gara joining us on the program. We appreciate him taking some time with us on a very busy day previewing what's going to be going on tonight and just talking some SEC football, Mizzou football. Certainly a lot of things to get to there. We'll take a break and we'll jump back into Cardinals baseball. I want to break down a little more some of the things that were said yesterday around this time by John Mozeliak when he was on the Countdown to Opening Day show. We'll get into that coming up in just a moment. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Back at it on a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Happy for another hour and a half or so. We're taking you until 8 o'clock this evening in the 7 o'clock hour. Bob Ramsey's going to join us. We may talk a little Cardinals with him, but mostly Billikens basketball. Kevin Wheeler will join us in the 7 o'clock hour as well, and we'll talk all Cardinals baseball with him. Wanted to play back for you some of what John Mozeliak said yesterday during the Countdown to Opening Day show, and kind of add on my thoughts on some of the things that he had to say, because I thought there were some interesting things that were mentioned. And we'll give you a chance to respond as well coming up later on in the show, whether you're calling or texting at 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. You can also tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air, or you can leave a voice message on the Odyssey app. All right, so let's again, if you heard the interview yesterday, you've heard some of this, but I wanted to play back some of these cuts, and then I'll kind of jump in and tell you my thoughts on what's being said. First off, when it comes to Nolan Arenado, a few things he said. First off, did not run away from the fact that the intention absolutely is still to trade Arenado.
Elephant in the room would be, what do we do with Nolan? And so still talking with some teams on that, and you know, hopefully once that gets wrapped up, if that does, then we can pivot and do a couple other things.
Yeah, and we'll get to that pivot and those other things that they'd like to do coming up in just a moment. But sticking with Arenado, you know, one of the things that we have discussed a lot, whether it's on this show or other shows on KMOX or on the Gas House Gang, things like that, about the value that exists for Arenado. And right now, it's not clear if there is a lot of value for him out there across the industry. He's coming off back-to-back seasons where his offensive profile has gone in a direction that you would not want it to go. He's still a very high-level defender at third base, but he's got a fair amount of money that's attached to him as well, and there's only some teams that he would be interested in going to. All that being said, Mo does believe that there is still value to be had in trading away Arenado.
We certainly think he still has value as a player, and you know, candidly, I think he's going to help somebody, and whether that's the St. Louis Cardinals or someone else, that'll still to be determined. But you know, I think there's a lot left in his tank, and so certainly not just going to walk away from this.
Yeah, and I'd never expected them to walk away from it. I did think it was interesting that he said whether it's the St. Louis Cardinals or somebody else. Obviously, their intention, it remains to trade Nolan Arenado, but the deal's got to get done first. And speaking of that, and there's been a lot of talk about this, and I don't want to relitigate things that were said a month ago. Like that's not really what I want to do, because we spent a lot of time after Mo announced at the winter meetings that their intention was to trade Arenado. We talked through him making the decision to make that declaration. But I did find this to be, of everything that he said to us yesterday, I thought maybe the most notable thing that was said was
when he made that decision to go ahead and say, yeah, the intention is to trade Nolan Arenado, they actually thought that at that point in time, there was a deal done that they would be able to finalize fairly quickly after that.
Like anything in this business, everything's sort of a time stamp in life, right? Mm-hmm. And at the time when we were talking about that, I thought pretty confidently that we had a deal in place and we were likely going to move him. Here we are, what, a month later? And obviously that didn't happen. And so, you know, maybe had I known what I know today, I might not have spoken as I spoke that night. But, you know, what I said is what I said. And so you have to live with that. But, you know, lesson learned, lots of moving parts in this business, and nothing's ever for sure until it's for sure.
Yeah, I find that to be interesting on so many different levels. First off, let's start with this. What else could have he said? What else could have he said? And I had some conversations about this on social media today. He could have lied. He could have not answered questions. He could have just not met with us. He could have done all of those things. But let's live in a scenario where, like he does at the winter meetings every single year, he's going to bring us in the media up to the Cardinals suite, and we're going to sit down around a table or sit down in couches, and we're going to talk through the Cardinals and what's going on and what it's going to look like moving forward. What else could have Mo said? Because there, everything, especially from a position player standpoint, but it implicates pitching as well. This, everything this team wants to do on the field is connected to moving Nolan Arenado. So how does a John Mozeliak, and this is one of these, I'm not sitting here trying to be the defender of Mo. That's not what I'm doing right now. I know there's a lot of criticism towards him. Some of it very, very rational and very well-deserved. Some of it, look, there's a dislike for him right now, and he could say just about anything, and people are going to take issue with it. But one of the things that I do appreciate, and I mentioned this yesterday on the show, is you ask Mo a question, he's probably going to, you know, within reason, he's probably going to give you an answer that's got some candor to it, that's got some honesty to it. So he brings us up during the winter meetings to talk about what 2025 is going to look like. Well, what the Cardinals want 2025 to look like is this. They want Nolan Gorman over at third. And they want to be able to play Brendan Donovan at second base a whole lot, because then that sets them up for what they want to do in the outfield and at the DH. It's all connected to each other. How in the world? So anytime I hear from people who are critical of Mo about how honest he was about the team wanting to trade Arenado at the winter meetings when he made those comments, anytime somebody's critical, my response to them is always, well, what would have you liked him to say? How do you talk about the plans for the 2025 Cardinals without saying that the intention is to trade Arenado? And I realize in the cut that I just played, Mo said that if he knew now what he, or if he knew then what he knows now, maybe he would have said it differently. I understand why he says that, because it's not a good look when you openly speak about trading Arenado and a month later, it seems like you're farther away from making that move than you were then. I'm not telling you it's a good look. It's a bad look. Not running away from that. Not a good look. But how do you speak about the 2025 Cardinals? I don't think you can. So what would you rather, as a fan? And you know what? You can text this in. I'd be curious. So we're going to take some phone calls on this coming up later on as well. What would you rather as a fan? Would you rather just not knowing anything? That because so many of their plans are dependent upon being able to trade Arenado, and they're not going to speak openly about that, so basically, you know, head goes into the sand and nothing is said about the team, and that's just where it's at? Or would you rather a scenario where you do get an idea of what's going on? I think it's important for fans to understand the direction of the team. I do. And not always has the organization been great at informing fans, especially in the offseason, of kind of what's going on. I think they've been really good this offseason. I do. I think we have an idea of what they want to do. Now, what they want to do and what they actually end up doing, those might be two different things, because they have yet to be able to accomplish their goal, their main goal of trading Nolan Arenado. I get that. I do. But I think as a fan, if you don't have a sense of what's going on, like, I don't know if you're totally paying attention. I'm not saying that to be rude to you. You don't have to pay attention. I think the Cardinals have done a perfectly fine job at kind of telegraphing what's going on. Now, I had a back and forth on social media today with somebody because, let's see if I can find this. Oh, I wasn't going to talk about this, but it's a good point. So a guy named Tony responded to a tweet that I had sent out about a conversation I had with Bernie today on the on Gas House Gang. And basically this tweeter accused Mo of lying about things. And I just say, can you give an example of what he's lied about? And this is what Tony tweeted back to me. And he said, what has he lied about? The retool, the rebuild? This is nothing more than a salary dump. Says the whole offseason has been nothing but a lie. And then, yeah, so that's the important part of that tweet. And I push back on that. I push back on that in a very hard way. There's two separate things going on right now. They are reducing payroll. We know they're reducing payroll. Not running away from the fact that they're reducing payroll. Not even telling you to accept the fact that they're reducing payroll. If you want to sit here and make the argument that, you know what, they really don't have to reduce payroll in this way to try to accomplish the other things that that they're trying to do. Okay, like that is a valid statement, and it's something worth talking about at some point in time. That conversation might not be a right now conversation, but it's a conversation to be had. I don't think there is anything wrong with looking at what the Cardinals are doing and questioning whether or not the reduction of payroll is the need that they're telling you that it is. But that's one thing. The other side of it is the very legitimate, the very heavy lifting that's going on of redoing player development. And Heim Bloom is in charge of that, and they've already hired a Rob Serfolio, and they've hired a bunch of other people, and they're doing things. They are clearly doing things. So this is where this guy Tony, who I tweeted back and forth with, this is where he and I kind of got into it a little bit, because I've got no problem with him or anybody else questioning whether or not the Cardinals should be reducing payroll as much as they are. We can talk about it. I do have an issue with people who are not willing to accept the fact that the organization is doing things to try to get smarter and try to be better at player development. This isn't an overnight snap your finger, be done sort of thing. This is going to take some time. But for this team to get to a point of where they are going to be winning at a high level, on a consistent level, they've got to be producing high-end major league talent, something that bluntly they have not been doing. So they've hired a bunch of really smart people. They're going to employ a lot of different data and technology and things like that. They're redoing the spring training complex after a spring training wraps up this year. They're doing all these things. So, no, nobody's lying about the retool, the reset, the rebuild, whatever the heck you want to call it, the re-whatever. Nobody's lying about that. But what is going on is that has to happen while they also make the decision to cut payroll. And you get upset about the team cutting payroll. You can be upset about that. Not going to be mad at you for being upset about that. But you rope in this other thing that's going on. And really, They're two different things. I feel like I'm Jerry Seinfeld in the episode of Seinfeld where he and Elaine sleep together. And he's saying, you know, that they're really two different things. The sleeping and the other thing are two different things. There are two different things here. There's the reduction of payroll, but there's the thing I care a whole lot more about, and that's getting player development right. And that's what they're trying to do. And that's what I am more focused on. All right.
I wasn't planning to go down that path. We've got more I want to play for Mo. We'll do that in just a segment, and we'll still give you an opportunity to chime in on this as well. It's all coming up. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
Just a few minutes left here in hour number one of the show. Hour number two, so after the 7 o'clock news, I promise the two, I'll give you the opportunity to chime in on all this Cardinal stuff when it comes to Arenado and everything else that's going on. We'll see. I think some people are a little bit tired out by it, honestly, because there's, you know, yesterday moved the story ahead a little bit. I'm a bit guilty of it because here I am talking about it. But I am also, I'm worn out on the different pieces of insider information that's coming out where, like, some of it's real and some of it's not. That's the frustrating thing in all this. And I don't say this to, like, denigrate any of the reporters out there because I think they're all really good at their jobs. I do. But whether it started with the list of teams that he reportedly would have accepted a trade to, that, you know, that list was immediately kind of questioned when that came out around the winter meetings. And then everything that, you know, are the Yankees interested in him or not? Are the Astros interested? Well, he's not going to go to the Astros. It's the Red Sox now. Then this, you know, recently this past week where we hear, well, maybe it's, you know, he might accept a trade to Seattle or Detroit. He's not going to take a trade to Houston, but he's going to take a trade to Seattle or Detroit. Like, that doesn't sound real to me. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's where there's so much misinformation in all of this. And, you know, the thing I always remind people, when you get information from insiders, you know, and this is, again, not a criticism of the insiders. This is the game that's played. That information many times is being placed. Like, there are, whether it's baseball, football, basketball, whatever, if you hear something from a certain reporter, those certain reporters are known for having relationships. Like, I can tell you what baseball reporters have a relationship with this agent and what baseball reporter has a relationship with this agent and what baseball reporter has a relationship with this front office and things like that. So then when you hear that information, you know a little bit, well, you know, this is probably coming from X, Y, or Z, and it makes it just look and feel a little bit different. And I think that's part of what's going on. I promise you, some of these details that we have heard about Arenado in the last month have come from a million different sources. I'm sure at times his agent have been a source. I'm sure at times teams have been a source. Whatever it might be, they're all a source, and it's trying. And, you know, one of the frustrating things in the world of, like, insider reporting is very, and unless you have an arson judge type situation, very often if you get something wrong, does it really matter? It's about getting it right and getting it first for all these reporters. And there's not a lot of, like, accountability for when you get things wrong. You might have an embarrassing tweet that's going to sit out there for a little while, but the industry has turned into one where it's about getting it first. And sometimes getting it right is almost secondary to getting it first. And we're dealing with a little bit of that right now. I've got more I want to play for. I was going to play more for Mo this segment. I didn't get it. But we will open up the phones, the text messages, tweets, all that. If you want to get in here after the 7 o'clock news, 314-436-7900. How are you feeling about the direction of the Cardinals? That's next here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
We do continue on as we get into hour number two of the program, taking you until 8 o'clock tonight. At 8 o'clock, we have the Gas House Gang, so you get more of me. It's me and Bernie Miklas this evening, 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock for today's edition of the program. Of course, if you're not familiar with the Gas House Gang, it is a video show that we do every day at 12 noon, and then we replay it as a radio show at night at 8 o'clock. But if you ever, maybe it's your lunch hour or something, you're looking for something to do, you can head to the KMOX Sports social media channels, and you can find us right there at 12 noon, Monday through Friday. All right, want to get more into some of the things, just my comments on some of the things that John Mozeliak said yesterday. And like I said, the phone lines are open now, so if you've got any thoughts on what Mo said yesterday, this Arenado situation, where the team is at this offseason, and also in terms of trying to put together redo player development, and some impressive hires have come down. If you've got any thoughts on that, we'll certainly welcome in your phone calls. 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. That's how you call, that's how you text. You can tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air, MattPauley on air. Or you can leave a voice message if you would like via the Odyssey app. Just click the little microphone button, and that comes straight into the studio. So those are the various ways that you can get in contact with the program. I do think that there is some, people are getting tired of the Arenado conversation, and I get that. But it's also the thing that is most important in this offseason because, as we've mentioned a million times, it's so much of what's being figured out for moving forward. All right, do want to play a few more clips, though, from Mo before we get done with that. Thought this was interesting because, part of I have made the argument, and this is not me denigrating the job that John Mozeliak has. He has a very important job. There's only very finite number of human beings walking the face of the earth who make final roster decisions for Major League Baseball teams. Every team's got one guy. So it's a pretty exclusive group that John Mozeliak is in. I'm not denigrating the importance of that job. But what I am doing is lifting up the importance of the job that Chaim Bloom is doing. And that is starting the reset of the player development. I think he's already done a great job with the hires that have been made, whether it was Rob Serfolio or the different directors and coordinators and things like that that have been announced. You look at these names that are coming into the organization, and it is incredibly, incredibly impressive. And that's just step one. There are many steps that need to be taken for this whole thing to work. There are a lot of things that have to go right for us to be sitting here 2-3 years down the road and for everybody to kind of go, oh, okay, I get it now. I see what they were trying to do. Yeah, there were some growing pains through all that, but that all kind of makes sense now. We are nowhere near that. And for a fan base that has seen a ton of winning in recent years, that still is going to be a hard sell. But this is, I thought this was interesting for Mo because he was talking about his job. And yes, his job is to build the roster for the 2025 Cardinals, 100%. But his job is also to help set things up for Chaim Bloom and company in 2026 and beyond. And that's a healthy part of this transition. Because you don't want a thing where you're not worried about what the people after you are going to be dealing with. And I thought that was, and just the dynamic, the office dynamic inside of baseball operations with the St. Louis Cardinals right now, I think is fascinating. And I'm not overstating that. Fascinating is a word we use way too often. I'm not overstating it. I truly believe it is fascinating because you have Chaim Bloom, who's not there every day, who has a project that he's working on before he takes over as the director of baseball operations. You have a bunch of people that Chaim Bloom wanted in place. He and Rob Serfolio wanted in place, Serfolio plus everybody else. You have all these people who have, basically walked into the office and they're part of the brain trust. But then you still have this other guy in Mozeliak who is still there is still the most important decision maker, but the people that he's collaborating with, the people that he's throwing things off of, they look a little different now. They sound a little different now. It's a different group of people. The comfort, the familiarity, it's not there like it was before. And it's just, it is a very interesting dynamic. And Mo talked about that a little bit yesterday and talked about how part of his job this year is trying to set up the next regime for as much success as possible.
Some of the decisions that I'm making or part of making right now are about setting up for the next generation or for the next group of leadership. And look, we already know who that is. That person's been hired, signed, and you know he's focused right now really on building up what he wants his team to look like as far as from a front office standpoint. My responsibility this year has been to help in any way I can on that side of the house, but also trying to think through like what we want this roster to look like really in 2026, 2027 and beyond. And so, you know, that's just been more of a collaborative model than maybe I've had to deal with in the past.
Yeah, I mean, and by the way, credit. I know it's sometimes people don't want to hear it. Credit to John Mozeliak for considering the thoughts of Heim Bloom and Company when it comes to making decisions that have ramifications for beyond 2025. You know, I was thinking about this yesterday when the arbitration stuff came down. When we see that there's three players that they don't come to an agreement on, and you look at those three players and you can see scenarios where any of those players could potentially get multi-year deals. Generally, the philosophy of the organization is if they don't come to an agreement by yesterday's date, well, if they are going to come to an agreement, that agreement comes along with a second or a third year, the way that they did with Tommy Edman last year. It's not as simple now, because if you're John Mozeliak and you're thinking about giving Lars Nootbaar a second year, well, what does Heim Bloom think about Lars Nootbaar? What does Heim Bloom think about Brendan Donovan? What's Bloom's long-term plans on how he wants Donovan on the roster? How much belief from Heim Bloom is there in an Andre Pallante? And that can complicate things a little bit, because if John Mozeliak has all the confidence and belief in the world in an Andre Pallante, but Heim Bloom doesn't, well, then Mo's probably going to stay away from giving Pallante that second year, so you're not entangling the next regime with your decisions. Now, there's going to be times where there's just ramifications to future rosters for sure. That's going to happen. But that's another part of this transition that I find to be very interesting. Something, and this might be actually something that I'm not a huge fan of. I look forward to talking with Rob Serfolio and talking with Heim Bloom about this at some point in the future, because something that we've talked about a lot on this show, and Kevin Wheeler and I have talked a lot about, one of the things I most appreciate about the way that the Cardinals are developing pitching right now, and there's some things that they can do better. They need to get guys to throw harder. They need to do a bunch of stuff. But one of the things that I think they're doing a really good job on in the minor leagues is allowing pitchers to go deep into games. They led minor league baseball in that category, you know, longest pitchers who went deepest into games. And is that going to continue on? Is the pitching philosophy going to change? Well, Mo basically said that expect changes in the way the Cardinals do develop pitching moving forward.
I would imagine that's going to change under Heim and Cerf, because, you know, clearly they're making a large investment in human capital on how to, you know, really sort of change the trajectory of what you're seeing with our pitching.
Yeah, I'm going to be very interested to see what that looks like moving forward. And those are more telling comments, I think, from, you know, you kind of read between the lines on some things, though, when we have interviews like we had yesterday, and I think you can start to learn some of what's going on. All right, when we come back, we are going to talk Billikens basketball. They have had a really solid start to conference play. They are 3-0 in the league after a disappointing non-conference portion of the season. What has led to that? The voice of the Billikens, Bob Ramsey, who you hear right here on KMOX, along with Earl Austin Jr. We'll hear from him coming up in just a moment. This is the Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Blocked by Avila, recovered by Kobe Johnson. Now to Swope, weaving through traffic, cross court to Jimerson, NBA range, bang! Jimerson in transition!
Started with the Robbie Avila block once again. Isaiah with a beautiful cross court to Gibby in the rhythm of the catch and another 10-point lead.
A fun moment for sure as St. Louis University got a big win against St. Bonaventure earlier in the week, 73-68. And what do you know? The Billikens are 3-0 in Atlantic 10 play. You just heard Bob Ramsey. Let's go ahead and bring him on to the program, play-by-play voice of the Billikens. Rammer, appreciate you taking some time. I know you got eyes on the college football game all at the same time, so thanks for finding some time for us as well.
Well, yeah, that's what we do, right? Because I'm sure that there's not a monitor without the football game on where you are, too.
No, we are, we're definitely paying attention for sure. Hey, what's I know a lot of things lead to a team kind of finding a new rhythm, but it really feels like since conference play has gotten started, this Billikens team has found that new gear.
There are a number of factors in my view. One of them is the gradual health and stability of Robbie Avila's ankle. That was, for those who've forgotten, he rolled it pretty bad twice in a couple of weeks' time. And I think that started to come back, and he started to feel like himself again, started to get his legs back under him. And I think one of the things that Coach Schertz had been disappointed in the first 6 weeks of the season, and that is an inability to run their defense efficiently, stopping straight line drives, trusting each other, understanding what the team defensive concepts were. And I think that has gradually come about. Still not perfect, but it's gradually come about. And I think with so many injuries for the coaching staff, just to figure out, okay, what do we have and what do we have with matchups and a rotation tonight on a given night? And I think all those things and others have started to come together a little bit for the Billikens, and it really makes a difference. The one thing that you still have hope for is even better health, guys getting healthy. In particular, Kellen Thames, the Pattonville High School, former Pattonville High School star, Matt, who, you know, has a situation where instead of giving you the 25, 30 minutes a night, he's been restricted to under 15. And we saw he was just in his, I think it was 13:40, something like that the other night, was absolutely dynamic on both ends of the floor. And if you can get Kellen even up to 20 minutes a game, that is a huge boost for this club. So I think there's a lot more growth possible for this squad.
Is it fair to say that when Avila was out with the ankle issue, that really slowed down Coach Schertz's ability to kind of put in his offense and put in what he wanted to do because he wasn't available to be in there for practice?
Oh yeah, without question. Yeah, no doubt about it. And you know, you still had guys playing and contributing and competing, but this has been a learning process ever since the staff and the players came in June. And it's admittedly a pretty steep learning curve to play they want to play, the way they want to play. And Coach mentioned to me the other night that one of the keys is when your players start to get it and can execute, we're talking in particular offense here, can execute offense with the coach without the coach having to sort of be the maestro and orchestrate each and every play. when the players start to get it and start to feel it at the same time, he goes, that's when this thing starts to click.
You've been around this game for a long time. Is there something liberating about when you have a you have high expectations going into the season, you have a non-conference season that does not meet expectations, when you turn the calendar and get to conference play and these games really start having meaning again, does that give a team almost this new sense of life and purpose?
If you win.
Yeah.
Now, if you were 1-2 or God forbid 0-3, not very liberating, but they kept. I think the key is I think what you're talking about is timing and getting better as the season goes on. Some teams do that. The good teams keep getting better as they go. Some teams kind of stagnate and kind of putz around and, you know, never really find that extra gear. And some teams regress. Some teams start playing well and then they get into the grind of their conference. And we look up and down the standings of some of the great conferences around the country, and it is a grind, and they start to fall apart. The grind of it eats them up. So, but when you've got a team that knows that they have room to grow and it's a legitimate potential to grow, you know, you're not asking a walk-on to suddenly start scoring 20 points a game. That's silly. It's unrealistic. But I'll go back to Kellen Thames. We've seen what Kellen can do. And so as he's able to play more and more, you see how that dynamic will definitely affect the way the team goes. And with the big three, with Robbie and the Swope Show and Gibson Jimerson, when you've got those three guys clicking and healthy, you know, there's your core. That's what you build around. And then it's a matter of having the other players figuring out where they fit in.
Gibson's in a really interesting spot because he was around before, and you know, he's put into that big three with those other two guys, but those other two guys have been you know, familiar with Coach Schertz and familiar with the system. What have you seen, and what do you how much do you get the sense that Jimerson has enjoyed kind of assimilating both with those other two guys and also being part of this Josh Schertz system?
Well, I know he loves it, and it fits perfectly with the way he likes to work and his work ethic, and he is a marvelous worker and a great guy, and he's one of those guys that's a good teammate. He's a very quiet person, but he leads by example and putting the work in, and even on those rare nights, it's only been a couple really all year, maybe three, that shots aren't really falling for him, or he's, you know, been the top of the scouting chart for the opposition and he really can't, they don't let him get loose. Even on those nights, the work rate never falls. The work rate is always there because there's always ways to help and getting to open space and setting screens and passing and doing all the other things you do to be a great basketball player. So I think you're right. He is flourishing in this system, but I think that's kind of what we all expected. We all expected with a little more freedom and other weapons to help provide that freedom, that there was no reason that Gibson Jimerson shouldn't have a great final season.
Billikens get the weekend off, and then they've got a big test coming up this week. They'll go to VCU and Richmond Tuesday, Saturday of next week. This VCU game. VCU's good. They've got a good record. They've got wins against Boston College and Miami and Colorado State. I mean, this is nothing against St. Bonaventure. That was a good test and a really good win. But are we going to learn something about the Billikens come Tuesday?
Yeah, and keep in mind, St. Bonaventure beat VCU. And so this is going to be a challenge. You know, the Billikens have never won at VCU. Zero victories there. So you've got that bugaboo, that jinx, that thing hanging over your head. It's a little bit of a different VCU as I see him from afar, not having seen him in person yet, obviously, in that maybe a little more offensive minded, a little more 3-point shooting minded, and then and maybe not the relentless, absolutely smothering 94 feet of defense. I'm not suggesting they're not a good defensive team. They are. But a slightly different look. So why do I bring that up? Maybe it gives you hope to go into one of the great atmospheres in college basketball and find a way to win. And the Billikens are a different team. VCU's not played a Josh Schertz team. So this is going to be a real interesting showdown on Tuesday, but it will absolutely be a tall challenge.
Last thing for you before we get you out of here, quick baseball question. Are you worn out on the Nolan Arenado talk? Are you ready for there just to be some finality to this whole thing?
Well, you know I am, and I've always been a fan of Arenado, and he and his agent and their strategy is confusing to me, and I expect it someday we'll talk all about it. I really thought the Astros thing made great sense for him, for the Astros, for the Cardinals. It just seemed like, oh, yeah, of course, they'll get that deal done. And then Arenado and his people back out. And the other things we're hearing, you know, Boston, a couple of other spots, it doesn't seem to make as much sense. But I'm not the one working with his contracts and what makes him happy. You know, the bottom line for a player, don't run from happiness. Where are you going to be happy? Well, and that's where you want to play, right? And will they be able to get it done? You know, I think that I know the Cardinals would like to have some clarity there so they know how to move forward with their young players in that third base spot. But it has not been an easy process. But I will tell you, Matt, because I am a fan, and he's as good a third baseman as we've ever seen in St. Louis for sure. If he's back at the hot corner for the Cardinals, and whether he's hitting third or sixth, I don't care, because he's a really good player. So it's going to work out one way or the other, and I know the Cardinals want to move him, but until there's some real news, it's kind of hard to really get beyond it.
Bob Ramsey, Earl Austin Jr., though, of the call of the Billikens and VCU at VCU coming up Tuesday night, 6 o'clock tip. That means our coverage begins at 5:45. Rammer, appreciate the time. Enjoy the rest of the football game, and we'll talk real soon.
Have a great weekend, Matt, and all the KMOX listeners. Talk to you Tuesday.
Awesome. Very good. That's Bob Ramsey joining us here on the program. We appreciate him spending a little bit of time with us. Yeah, it's an interesting game coming up against VCU coming up on Tuesday. And Rammer's right when he mentions the fact that VCU did lose to St. Bonaventure. Now, they lost at St. Bonaventure, not at home. And it was a really, really tight game, 77-75. Yeah, but that's a good VCU team, and they scheduled – well this year. I mentioned some of those teams that they've got wins against. They won a neutral site game against Boston College. They won a neutral site game against Miami. They won a neutral site game against Colorado State. So they've played a good number of neutral site games against some solid teams and come away with victories. And now this is going to be one of their tougher games. But it's been fun being able to watch what's going on with SLU here since conference play got started. Really, you look at everything going on college basketball wise when it comes to the major conference teams. Again, not taking anything obviously away from the MVCs and the OVCs that we have in the area, but just specifically when you're talking about SLU, Mizzou, and Illinois, the stories have been pretty darn good. Pretty darn good for the most part of what's going on. Mizzou basketball, it was good to see them get a league win after going winless in league play last year. They were able to come away with the win their last time out when they knocked off LSU, and they're going to play host to Vanderbilt in a game that's going to be coming up tomorrow. And then also Illinois has just been – I like this Illinois team a lot. They're fun to watch. They play hard. It seems like they're just a – they're a Brad Underwood coach team, and that's a good thing. Like this is a good group for Underwood to be coaching. Up to number 13 in the nation, they're going to match up against USC in a game that's taking place in Champaign coming up tomorrow. So good stuff all the way around when it comes to college basketball. And we're coming up on that time, you know, as college football really is wound down. We're just one game left after tonight. At that point, we can really start to focus in on what's going on in college basketball. And College basketball conference play, man, it goes by fast. It starts right around the start of the new year, and before you know it, we're talking conference tournaments, and we're talking March Madness, and we're talking all these things. It happens incredibly quickly. So if you're not paying attention, sometimes it sneaks up on you. If you're not paying attention to what's going on in the world of college basketball, might be worth your time, because we've got some really, really good stories in the area for sure. And we're going to work on talking to some more folks connected with those programs here moving forward. We are going to shift back to baseball in just a moment or so. It is a Friday, so what do we do on Friday? We bring in our guy Kevin Wheeler, talk our weekly baseball conversation with him. That's up next. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. We are starting to wrap up the program. But before we get out of here for the night, it is a Friday, and that means we welcome in our good friend. You hear him on the Dave Glover Show. He is Kevin Wheeler. Hey, Kevin.
What's up? How you doing?
I'm all right.
Feeling better?
I'm okay.
It's looking good.
First day back in the office.
Yeah, you're in the building.
Yeah.
I'm willing to be in the room with you, so you must be looking all right.
Well, I've been on meds long enough now that I no longer am contagious to other
people. Yeah, I figured that. You wouldn't be here if you were.
No, I wouldn't do that.
I trust you.
So there you go. Wanted to go through a few things. I don't know how much of you heard of what John Mozeliak said to Mike Claiborne and myself yesterday during the countdown show, but there was a few things he said that I thought were interesting. We talked about today on the Gas House Gang, Bernie and I did. I wanted to kind of bring it back with you as well. And I'll start with what I thought was the most interesting, where he said, yeah, when I said that we intended to trade Nolan Arenado, thought I had a deal done for him. I appreciate the honesty. It makes me wonder, is that Houston? Is that somebody else? It creates more questions than answers, but it was an interesting thing said by Mo yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's being honest, and that's fine, you know. And in the moment, he was being as honest as he could be, right? I mean, because he could have just said nothing, which from his perspective is probably better, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, from their perspective, it would probably be better if you didn't say that at all. But Mo's generally pretty upfront with us, you know. He's typically on, you know, he's not going to tell you the whole truth, but he usually is as truthful as he can be. And that's what he was doing there. Unfortunately, there's a miscalculation there, whether it was not correctly assessing whether or not Nolan would approve a deal to Houston, or maybe it was the other side that they misread and it wasn't Houston at all. It was a different team.
Yeah, and I also don't know how he addresses the 2025 Cardinals without being somewhat upfront about...
Because he said that at the meetings.
Yeah, it's... When you talk about the 2025 Cardinals, you want to create runway for kids. You want to have Nolan Gorman at third. You want to be able to have Brendan Donovan at second. That way you can have the outfield set up the way that you want to have. It's like everything we've talked about a million times. Arenado is the first domino to basically everything else happening.
Yeah.
So he can sit here and say, well, I said it at the winter meetings because I thought a deal was just about done. But at the same time, you really can't talk about 2025 and be honest about it without acknowledging the fact that Arenado is likely to be moved.
And that's why he did it.
Yeah.
We've been doing this for weeks now, like trying to talk about the outfield or trying to talk about what you can't, because we have no idea what at bats are going to be available. Or what position's going to be available. Now, we can play the game. All right, well, if Arenado's here, then Gorman's at second and Donovan's probably in left. I guess that means they're going to play Nootbaar in center. Are they? Are they going to veer off of their defense in center field thing or what? So, you know, you can play that game, but it's really not defined. And moving Arenado defines everything.
Right.
Now you know, okay, Gorman's going to get his shot at third, and Donovan's probably your primary second baseman, and Noot stays in left. And we'll probably count on either Siani or Scott in center. And then, you know, there's room there to give at-bats to Thomas DeJacy, too. So even if they do move Arenado, by the way, I think we still need to see a healthy amount of Newton center, because that's the only way you're going to get a lot of at-bats for DeJacy. And I think they need to get a lot of at-bats for him. I don't think it's wise to go into 2026 not knowing what he is at the major league level.
I also think if you don't trade Arenado, then that's going to continue to, unless they come out and publicly state, we are not going to trade Nolan Arenado. He is not on the block. He is going to be the third baseman for the St. Louis Cardinals when the 2025 season comes to an end. Unless you state that, and it's very truthful, if you go into the year and Arenado's still on the roster, but you know that deep down they still want to move him, I think that's counterproductive as well. Let's get the group on opening day that you kind of want it to be.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously that's the ideal. And it's to make it work, because this is the thing where the team doesn't have control, right? There are three parties here that have a say in this: the Cardinals, the other team, and Nolan Arenado.
Yeah.
So you have to find a team that Nolan Arenado approves of, or none of the other things matter.
Yeah, all three parts can say no.
And you'll have, it's very clear there are other teams that would welcome Nolan Arenado, but it might require you to take on or keep more of the money than you would like to. And if it comes down to that, I think you have to do it, because you have to create the opportunity. Think of it this way. Like, the way I would put it in my head is, whatever money I eat on Arenado is money that I'm spending on developing the future of my team.
Right.
That's how I would justify it in my head. Now, I don't think I'd want to eat 80% of it, but what if you have to eat half? You still save half. And so let's say you're saving half. You owe him $27 million. This year, so let's just count that. Let's just divide that by two. So if it's all you have to do to move him is eat half of each year that's owed, right? Or each half of these next 2 years, whatever, however you want to do it. If you would still have to trade two or three other players to save that same amount of money, but you could do it with one guy,
right?
And not hurt your rotation depth and make sure you know. Now I still would move a pitcher personally. I would be moving one of Michaelis or Matz. We know the Michaelis problem is the no trade, and he's been bad, and he makes a lot of money. So I'd still be looking to move Matz, because as it stands now, you do not have a rotation spot for McGreevy, and I don't want him just back at AAA. If I'm running the team, I want to see what is this guy at the major league level for 20, 25, 30 starts.
I have a hard time believing Steven Matz is going to be on this roster.
Yeah, I do too, and it would make sense to do it. Now, it may just be a matter of kind of letting some of this sort out, and somebody says, all right, you know what, we really need the pitching depth, and $12 million is not that big a deal for a solid lefty.
Yeah.
But
that's a value, even, well, maybe a value is too strong of a word, but that's a perfectly fine contract.
Yes, on
even,
a one-year risk. Yeah,
even
yeah.
with his health issues.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, not a big deal for a lot of these teams.
No, like that's not something.
Not a big deal for a normal Cardinals team.
When you look at the money that is being thrown around on mid-level pitchers,
yeah.
that Matt's salary does not look crazy.
It's not crazy, but obviously the biggest problem is keeping him on the field.
Yeah, 100%. Mo said a couple other things. One thing that kind of struck me, and I don't even know how much of a talking point this can even be, but I did find it, I get the sense that he's kind of in murky waters right now, because all his team of people, many of them aren't there anymore. And now all of a sudden it's the Rob Serfolios and other people have been brought in, and there's not like this, you know, working chemistry that he's had for years and years and years. And I just get the sense that, you know, he made a comment to me that, you know, previously if somebody was in a bad mood or it wasn't a good day to talk or whatever, you kind of knew, like you knew the rhythms of the office, and that doesn't exist right now. And I find that to be interesting to kind of illustrate or imagine what it looks like in the office for him.
It's
in
not his final, normal, yeah.
Yeah, in his final season where everything around him is changing.
Think about how long he had a relationship with LaRocca.
Yeah.
I mean, Gary LaRocca. I mean, 30 years, 25 years, right? I mean, and this goes back to before Mo was a GM. This goes back probably to before he was even the assistant GM. Like, they, you know, so yeah, there's a difference between that and people you're just getting to know. But also, you know, the way we talked about this on DGS today with me and Bernie and Dave, that, you know, Mo is kind of in the position right now where his job is almost just to do the dirty work.
Yeah, 100%.
Because, and it makes sense, because the Red Sox did Chaim Bloom dirty, right? He gets that job in one of the early years. They're like, hey, by the way, you got to trade Mookie Betts, and don't just go get the best return for him. You got to attach David Price's crappy contract to him too. So whatever that means, get rid of the money, and that's all we care about. So he had to go make a bad trade to dump David Price and to trade Mookie Betts and not get much in return. And that's basically was the downfall. He was put in a bad position early on in Boston. And I kind of appreciate that they're not putting him in that position here. You know, they've said it a little differently. They're like, well, he needs to work on building the farm system and doing it, which he does. Like, you got to build that infrastructure before you want to worry too much about both, right? You don't want him doing two jobs. You want him doing one at a time. And then by next year, that other stuff will be set and he can move into the position Mo's in now. But if you're asking him to do both now, you're also putting him in the role of being the hangman. where, you know, you're firing people in the scouting department. You're gonna have to make unpopular moves like cut the payroll, trade Nolan Arenado, maybe trade other guys, maybe trade Sonny Gray later on, maybe Ryan Helsley later on, right? Well, you don't want him to be the bad guy.
No.
You want him to come in clean slate, the reset is done, and that doesn't mean spend right away, although you could, but doesn't mean that, but it means it's upward and forward when he takes over as opposed to still doing dirty work.
You know, the more going from that to the next thing, arbitration stuff came out yesterday. I was a little surprised they didn't work out a 2-year deal with Brendan Donovan. I thought that was going to happen, and it still could.
It still can.
It still could, but I do wonder if it is more complicated right now for multi-year deals because obviously Mo and Bloom can talk through things.
Right.
But I would also think that Mo doesn't want to make too many decisions that are impacting Bloom.
Yeah, I would imagine they would both talk about that. I mean, and I would imagine everybody would want a 4 or even 5-year deal on Donovan if you could agree on the number. You know, buy out the rest of his arb years, maybe a year or two of free agency. It would make sense for a player like that, that's stable, that's versatile. You're never going to be a team that doesn't need a Brendan Donovan.
Right.
Because he can be anything. Now, and high on base guys, tremendously valuable. So, you know, there's that part. You know, I always do. I laugh at these teams that, you know, will go to trial over like $175,000. Like, I think that's the case on Pallante, right?
It's like, yeah, Pallante filed at 2.1 and the Cardinals filed at 1.95.
Like that. I'm surprised that teams do that. I know what their argument is going to be. Their argument is going to be, if we settle higher on that one, the next time it comes up, we're going to have to do the same thing. And I said, yeah, but you know what's going to happen as we go along? You're also, the teams are going to make more money because the TV contracts get bigger and all of that. So like 10 years from now, you're going to be making more. I understand why they do it. But it's not, this is just one example. This is not the end of the world, right? This is, you know, I understand what they're doing. Everybody has their formulas and they want to stick with their formulas and they want to stick with their precedent so that they can control how fast salaries rise. I understand it. I just think it's silly when we're talking about such a small amount of money within the scope of a large team, but not as dumb as what the Cubs did with Kyle Tucker.
Yeah, where you want to give him a huge contract.
I mean, you made a big deal to get this guy who's a rock star. He's got 1 year left. He's going into free agency at the end of 2025. I'm guessing you want to keep him.
You would sue.
I mean, I don't know why you'd make the trade and trade one of your top prospects to go get a guy for 1 year and not have any intent of keeping him. And you're gonna piss him off by going to arbitration over $2.5 million on a guy that's a stud like he is?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
So $17.5 million to $15 million are the two numbers there, and $2.5 million's a lot of money, but not with a player at that level.
No, not with
it's nothing when you're trying to win goodwill
and sign him to $100+, you know.
I mean, it'd be a $500 million contract.
Right.
I mean, something like that.
So yeah, I don't. I also think there's value in not going into that room.
Because you got to go in there and badmouth them.
Yeah. To me, you know, the 200,000 minus whatever it is, the difference between Pallante and the Cardinals, it's worth it to me for $150,000 to not have to go into a room to a guy who I'm telling, hey, you're an important part of this team. Yeah. You're our number three starter. We're proud of you, of what you did last year. You're part of this young core. This is the message you've been sending them. But now because you're trying to avoid paying an extra $150,000, you're going to tell them actually how bad he is.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that setup. And I would get it if it was a bigger amount of money.
Right.
Right. But I mean, at that level, you know, these are teams that make so much money. I mean, think about that. That amount of money we're talking about is less than 1/3 of the major league minimum salary.
Yeah. It's nothing. It is absolutely nothing. The other ones are a little bit bigger. Nootbaar filed at 2.95. Cardinals at 2.45. Donovan was, they were $450,000 apart. Donovan filed at 3.3. Cardinals at 2.85.
Yeah. And even with those guys, I mean, again, just for the goodwill alone. Although, again, sometimes you're not going to rag the player, right? Like, I'm sure the argument against Nootbaar is just going to be he gets hurt too much.
Yeah, and
you know, it's you're not tearing down the player's performance. It's like, well, he's just not been healthy enough.
Honestly, just watching how arbitration goes, if they go to arbitration against Pallante and they go to arbitration against Nootbaar, I think they win because their arguments, because the clubs tend to win first off. The system's kind of rigged for the teams, and it's a really easy argument on Nootbaar with his injury history, and it's a really easy argument for Pallante with his lack of track record.
Yeah, because he's mostly been a reliever, and
So that's why they go to it. You know, that's it's a.
I get it. I know. Just like I
don't like it.
Yeah, I know. I And again, I understand, you know, because they say, well, it adds up because if we give it on all of them, it's $1 million. Okay, well, you know, $1 million for a major league organization is not that much.
I mean, there's so many things you could change. I would rather not, you know, just be you present packets of information and it's not
well,
public.
Also, why can't the arbitrator pick the middle ground?
Right.
You got to pick one or the other.
Pick a winner and a loser. Yeah. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So, all right. So we will go through the weekend and we'll see if Nolan Arenado is still a Cardinal
Man,
come Monday.
I can't wait for something to happen there so we just don't have to keep asking the same questions. But yeah. We have to. You know, every day or two, there's some minor new thing.
Right.
Right. You'll get a report like the one we talked about the other day with Morosi and, oh, well, Seattle and Detroit. Like, you're always getting these little bits. So you have to examine it. Because everything we want to talk about with this team is somewhat related to that.
And even yesterday, Mo said to us that they want to still sign relief pitching and they still want to sign a right-handed bat that can play in the outfield. None of that's happening if Nolan Arenado's on the team. Probably.
Why do they want to do that?
They just do.
Where does that player fit?
I'm not sure.
Who's not going to make the team because of that?
Victor Scott.
Okay.
That'd be my first thing. Hopefully not Thomas DeJacy. Maybe Lucan Baker doesn't make the team.
Well, he's not. Yeah, I mean, as it is now, he probably wouldn't. But
yeah,
it's fine. I mean, it's not the end of the world. But why can't Thomas DeJacy play some left field?
I would put him out there. By the way, Andrew Kittredge gets $10 million from Baltimore. Good for him.
He had a big year. Yeah. And by the way, it tells you where the relief market's headed.
Yep.
Because that's a setup man, not a closer, and he got $10 million.
$10 million. Yeah, that's a good deal. Have a great weekend.
See you, buddy.
That's Kevin Wheeler. I'm Matt Pauly, and that's going to do it for this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line. Have a wonderful weekend to all of you as well, and we'll talk to you again on Monday here on KMOX.